This may indeed be one of the most boring shows I've ever recorded, possibly. Being aware of that fact, I am attempting to spruce it up with horizontal stripes and a sports coat. I do what I can, and a different angle here on the laundry cam. Doesn't look like a laundry room anymore from this angle, but I promise you, the washer and dryer are right over there. If you didn't know it, this is your friend and mine, Martin Zender, and I'm going to bring you scintillating, stimulating, possibly aggravating news about Turkey-Israel relations, political relations, familial relations, love relations. Why would I do this? Because we're talking about Turkey. Why are we talking about Turkey? Because modern-day Turkey is ancient Asia Minor, the location of the seven ecclesias, the seven outposts, seven encampments of Revelation, where the Spirit of God walks among them, telling them things, telling them what they are doing right, telling them what they're doing wrong, telling them to shape up or ship out. Yes, we are not under the shape up, ship out contract. We are not under a contract of any kind. But what we are discussing here in the unveiling is a contract. Well, it's a figurative contract called the New Covenant. If I might share this little piece of information with you, the New Covenant is completely figurative because it's not a covenant at all. The Old Covenant is literal. The Old Covenant is God telling Israel, you do this, I'll do that. The covenant, by definition, depends on two people. It consists of two parties coming into an agreement. Each has a role to play. Each has a contract to fulfill. Your end of the covenant. What's your end of the covenant? Well, I just have to obey. Obey 613 laws, and then I'm okay. And then God's end of the covenant says he'll bless me no matter what. I mean, no, he'll bless me depending on what. He'll bless me if I do all these things. If I obey all 613 commands and have no false gods before me and stop coveting my neighbor's wife, then all is good. The New Covenant is a figure of speech known as retention, where a term is retained, in this case covenant, in order to relate it to the new thing. For instance, the deaf shall hear. That's a figure of speech. How can deaf people hear? The deaf shall hear, but that's impossible. They're deaf. No, we're retaining the term deaf to identify these people as those who were recently deaf, to distinguish them from those who were never deaf. God, I love making sense for a living. So the New Covenant is not a covenant at all. But we're retaining the word covenant to relate it to something that went before it. That is the Old Covenant. This is the New Covenant. But Martin, it's not a true covenant because God's promised to do everything while Israel lies there inert. Of course, I know that. Israel does nothing in the New Covenant. God puts his law upon their hearts, changes their heart from a heart of, to a heart of flesh, from a heart of stone. And he does it bing bang like that. It's called the new birth. So it's not a literal covenant, is it? So we're not under a covenant, but the covenant we're discussing now is the covenant that God will have on Israel. And he prepares them in modern day Turkey when these seven ecclesias form in the final years of millennium six. I just think it's interesting to look at the political situation between these two nations, since many of the Israelites will be coming from Israel to Turkey. Some, I don't know how many, and others will be coming, as we discussed, from Ezekiel chapter 37. It is the influx of the house of Israel, those Israelites that have lost their national identity, even to themselves. They don't realize they're Israelites, but they sit around scratching their heads all day, wondering why they think about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all the time. Can't stop thinking about these people. What is that? I can't stop loving things about Israel. I can't stop thinking about the Jews and the feasts and a leg of lamb and brisks and oh, pomegranates and bar mitzvahs, and I just want to sacrifice a lamb. What is it about me? Oh, I can't help myself. Well, you're an Israelite. Deep down, you have an antenna for it. It's been given you by God. And when the broadcast of the circumcision evangel, when the frequency of the circumcision evangel is broadcast, your antenna responds to it. It vibrates like crazy. And you start to pick up sounds and noises and voices. And you hear it and you go, wow. It's like when, you remember that Steve Martin movie? The jerk, he was raised as a poor black child. And he's growing up listening to black music. He's never heard like Western jazz. He's never heard like jazz music. So one day, he doesn't even know that he has an antenna for it. And he forces himself to like this, you know, soul music or whatever you want to call it, black music, like the old slave spiritual, swing low, sweet chariot, and coming forth to carry me home, a swing low. So Steve Martin hears this his whole life, and then one day he's listening to the radio and he hears this crackle, and he picks up a jazz station out of like St. Louis or something. And his finger starts to, instinctively click to it. He starts looking at himself like in the third person, like outside of his own body, staring at him. And it's like he gets it. It was very awkward trying to dance to these spirituals that his black family would play. He just forced himself. He looked stupid. It's kind of like me trying to do the bossa nova. Or they try to teach me here, what's that South American dance? Tango from Argentina. You know, they're trying to, or they get me to do the, not the bossa nova, but there's some other dance. I don't know. You know, I can't do it. And so people laugh at me. So I'm dancing with a bunch of Peruvians, and they go, and people watching say, one of these things just doesn't belong. One of these things. They're talking about me. Thanks for calling me a thing. But I don't mind, you know, being a fool for other people's entertainment. I have a good time. Anyway, there's Steve Martin responding to his music. Finally hears it. So you got these people in Western nations, these Israelites that don't even know it, and they hear the gospel of Peter, James, and John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Jesus, and James, and they love James. Oh, they love the condemnation of James. They love James talking about adulterers and adulteresses and scolding them. Oh, how they love to be scolded, how they love to be challenged, how they love to be tweaked, to be dictated to by the law. They love reading these instructions to the ecclesias of Revelation, and they're taken to the woodshed, and they like it there. And so when they hear the gospel of the circumcision, their antenna starts to vibrate, and they start picking up noises and sounds. Ye must be born again. Oh, they love that. Ye must be born again. Ye must be born again. They go crazy over that. It's like a tuning fork vibrating. Ye must be born again. They love it. And when they hear Paul, when we take our evangel to them, they look at us like they're like we're nuts. It's a foreign language to them because they have no receiver for it. They don't get that frequency. Like we're broadcasting on FM. Like we're broadcasting at 107.3. And circumcision is broadcasting on AM, way down on the dial. You know, like 97.6, way down there. Down there where you get, you know, All Things Considered on PBS. Or you get your jazz stations or your classical music. You got to go way down the AM dial. If you want rock and roll, which is Paul's Gospels, rock and roll, baby, you got to go to the FM. You got to go to 107.3. All those 106.1, yeah. You have to go to the beach out of Miami. What is that? 106.3 down in Miami. I picked that up once in a while. Maybe that's 107.3, yeah. The beach. And that's where you hear this marvelous kaleidoscopic message of the grace of God. And those of us with antenna for it, with an antenna for it, we start freaking out. We're like Steve Martin looking down at our fingers. We're like, what the heck? I'm dancing for the first time. For the first time, I'm hearing a message that I dig. I'm hearing a message that makes my hips move, like Elvis. Makes me move my feet, like the tango. And so, wow. Still trying to think of that damn South American dance in Brazil. Is it? Not the bossa nova. Write me and give me some kind of South American dance that people do. Is it the mambo? No. Is mambo number 5? No. Mambo number 6? I can't remember. Anyway, we're grooving to rock and roll. Whereas the circumcision, it's more like it's classical music. It's traditional music. It's old music. It's maybe, at best, it's Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from Company B. At best, it's the Lennon Sisters. At best, it's Frank Sinatra, maybe Jimmy Durante. We're grooving to the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin, the Beatles. They're grooving to Celine Dion. We have Buddy Holly. You know, they have Boxcar Willie. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with Boxcar Willie. That's where your radio is tuned. So all these people in the West who are hearing this, they're going to respond to the call to go to Turkey, which was my original topic. And they are going to gather because birds of a feather flock together. Israel-Turkish relations refer to the bilateral ties between the State of Israel and the Republic of Turkey. Why would these two countries have any relations whatsoever? Well, they're kind of neighbors. Turkey is to the north of Israel. It's giant. Turkey's like huge. I'm looking at it on the map right now. I'm not going to show it to you. It's too risky. This is very, these intimate relations between Israel and Turkey. Turkey looks giant in orange. It looks like the size of the Baltic Sea. Probably the size of the Midwest from Omaha, Nebraska to Indianapolis, Indiana, including Little Rock, Arkansas. These relations were formalized in March 1949. Turkey, did you know this, was the first Muslim-majority country to recognize the State of Israel. So there's this kinship back there that they recognize the State of Israel, a Muslim state. I didn't know that Turkey was mainly Muslim, but indeed. Military, strategic, and diplomatic cooperation between Turkey and Israel were accorded high priority by both countries, I wonder why, which shared concerns with respect to the regional instabilities in the Middle East. Oh, there are instabilities in the Middle East? Wow, I'm learning this for the first time. According to a New York Times report in 1999, the strategic partnership between the two countries had the potential to alter Middle East politics. Trade and tourism were booming. That's a bad choice of words there, booming. Smacks of terrorism. The Israel Air Force practiced maneuvers in Turkish airspace, and Israeli technicians were modernizing Turkish combat jets, as well they should. There were plans also for high-tech cooperation and water sharing. Well, you know, you're becoming intimate when you share water. Uh-oh, don't be upset about this, but relations between Israel and Turkey took a downturn during the term of Recep Tayyip Erdogan as Turkish Prime Minister. Recep, that's the guy's first name, Recep, R-E-C-A-P. Tayyip Erdogan as Turkish Prime Minister, though Erdogan had paid an official visit to Israel in 2005 and initially had maintained business-as-usual relations, his perceived anti-Israel rhetoric is considered to have symbolized an international shift of Turkish interests in the Middle East and realignment from secular Israel-oriented to Islamicist pro-Arab stance, oh no, of the Turkish Republic. Are they still this way? I'll find out here. Are they still this way? Pro-Arab? Islamist, we'll find out. Most notably, the relations deteriorated after the 2008-2009 Gaza war and the 2010 Gaza flotilla raid. God damn that flotilla raid. In March 2013, Israel apologized for the raid. You know, it's better to apologize than to ask permission, right? You just go ahead. You feel like doing a flotilla raid. It comes upon you one day. And, 3 years later, after it doesn't pan out, you just apologize. It's like Hitler saying, I'm sorry about World War II. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry I tried to take over the world. Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm sorry I put people in my refrigerator and ate them. Oh, okay. Well, as long as you're sorry. So they apologized for the raid, opening path for normalized relations. Holy cow, it worked, in spite of the flotilla. However, despite U.S. mediation, no progress has been achieved in reconciliation through 2013. Yes, but this is 2017, isn't it? It is, and I have more information for you. With the scandal over alleged Turkish involvement and exposure of special agents of Israel and Iran in October 2013, the relations between Israel and Turkey hit a new low. But that doesn't bother us. I predict that things are going to be relatively smooth between Israel and Turkey. It doesn't bother us when things hit a new low, when anything hits a new low. Even when we hit new lows, it's just an opportunity. You know how God is. He takes things down to their lowest before he kicks them into their highest. He likes that. He's in a big, fat, glorious, big, fat, hairy, glorious, predictable rut. However, in December 2015, Turkey and Israel began to negotiate on restoring diplomatic relations by holding a secret meeting in the aftermath of the 2015 Russian Su-24 shoot down. I'm not kidding you. This is the Russian Sukhoi Su-24 shoot down by Turkey the previous month. You can read this for yourself. I'm simply on Wikipedia under Israel-Turkey relations. You can read this for yourself. Becoming quite interesting here to me. Subsequent crisis with Russia and the increasing isolation of Turkey. The two countries reached an agreement on 27 June 2016 to start the process of normalization of ties. This is where we are today, as you're going to see. I'm not going to exhaustively go into every detail of this because who cares? I mean, if you think I go around in my day thinking about Israeli-Turkish political relations, you are sadly mistaken. I do think about it some, though, which might differentiate me from most. That's okay. We're going to just fly through. Let me look at my time. Yeah, okay, I'm probably going to have to continue. Look at that. I like when I'm flipping my screen, you're seeing it on the Glinda bubble. I have a glass Glinda bubble in view on the laundry cam. If you're not on the laundry cam, you may want to check that out. I think it's worth looking into. So I'm looking at my time. I'm going to continue to this tomorrow. Tomorrow will be part two on this topic. I don't anticipate spending any more than one more day on it. Let's see. Tomorrow will be Thursday, maybe Friday, and then a fresh start on Monday when we go into Revelation chapter 22. I'll prepare you now. This is show 780. I'm really thinking 800 is going to do it. If it even comes close, I'm going to work toward that. Chapter 22, though, is glorious. It's a great chapter of Revelation. So who knows, you know, I might go to show 1000. But seriously, I don't know until I get there. I have been enjoying really riffing and speaking to you on these topics of consequence. So I'm not really interested in the political situations, of course, except as they touch upon God and his word. It's why I talked about Trump earlier this week. It does touch upon God and his word. It touches upon that particular topic, touched upon pride, touched upon Paul's gospel, really, that we would have no confidence in flesh, that how can we look down our noses at others, at others when we also are flawed in the hands of the potter, put on the wheel, on the pottery wheel, slabs of clay, all of us. No difference between my clay and anyone else's. God takes, Romans chapter 9, from the same lump of clay. He makes both vessels of honor and dishonor. If it was from different lumps of clay, then we could possibly say, ha ha, my lump's better than your lump. My clay's better than your clay. I came from this elite quarry over here, and they mixed a little water in me, and I'm a special product. And then this clay over here came from a pit. It came from a low place. It came from Sodom and Gomorrah. It came from the banks of the Dead Sea. Sorry about your luck. But no, the clay is common. And how appropriate for God to use clay as the substance from which human beings are made. I mean, it's malleable. It does have water in it. It's not dust like the King James Version says. From dust thou art, to dust thou shalt return. So I got no antenna for that noise. None whatsoever. It's not dust. You can't make anything from dust. Plants don't grow in dust. Palm trees don't grow in dust. It's soil. God fashioned from the soil and made Adam. And it's that dirt. It's the earth mixed with water, and it becomes a malleable substance. What do you do with dust? You blow on it and it goes away. You take pledge, lemon scented pledge, and you go after it with a magnetized mop. But this, yes, the magic touch of God upon it. And we come from a common lot, so you have no reason to look down your nose on anyone else. So as these things arise, I will bring them up as I'm impressed by certain words and phrases and realities. I will bring them to you. I am thrilling to this as you are. I assume you are. I look forward every morning to talking to you. Honestly, I have to say this is the highlight of my day, to fellowship with fellow members of the body of Christ. I don't take one of you for granted. I don't take these truths for granted, and that we have in front of us the Word of God that we can share together.